Kostov, let's learn the Dalet Minim. Okay, let's learn some of the basics about what we should look for in purchasing the Arba Haminim, the four Minim, the mitzvah of Lulav and Esrei. Okay, everybody, let's begin. First thing is something very interesting you say to appreciate. Let's first discuss what is the mitzvah d'oraisa of taking the lulav and esrei. The pasuk says ulakachtem lochem, you shall take for yourselves bayoyim harishayin, the first day. The first day refers to the 15th day of the month. Pri eitz hadar, that refers to the esrei. Kapois, branches of tamarim, that's the lulav. Va'anaf, a branch, eitz avos, that is the hadasim, the arve nochal, and the willow. The arve, I guess, also means a branch of the nachal, of the stream, a place where there's a lot of water. Usimachtem, and then the pasuk says, you shall rejoice lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim. If we read this pasuk very carefully, there appears to be a contradiction. It first begins with an instruction to take only on the yoim harishayin. And then the pasuk concludes, Usimachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim, 7 days. So what is it? Is the mitzvah to take the four minim on the first day, or is the mitzvah to take the dalet minim on for all 7 days? Who asked this? What? It refers to all, no, it says Usimachtem, it appears from the way Chazal understand this, that it refers to the four minim. It's going back that you shall use these four different minim as a tool, as an instrument to rejoice before Hashem. Now, why do these four specific things give you joy? That's a very tough question, especially in today's day and age, where we don't necessarily look at nature as things which give the average person joy, but it appears that these things are objects which, at least the first three, produce fruit. A pre-eitz hadar is very appealing to the eye, to the senses, to the nose. It has fragrance. It is something which is aesthetically beautiful. It used to at least be something which people would eat on a regular basis, an esrei. Today we don't eat them. Today maybe our estrogen are not what they used to be. Maybe things have changed. It's something which gives a person joy. A lulav produces dates. It also gives joy. Anaf eats avos. It's a branch. I guess it produces fragrance. Okay, I guess the hadasim is something which also enhances the person's senses. And what about the arve nochal? Chazal says the arve nochal doesn't have really much to offer, but it's not necessarily true. The arve nochal indicates that there is a blessing of water. Okay, you have to appreciate it. Even though, I'll give you an example. Okay, mashul lemahadav adayme. We live in New York City, Baruch Hashem. And in New York City, in the water, we hope there are copepods. What's a copepod? A bug. It's a bug. A sheretz amayim. We hope and pray that there are copepods in our water. Because if there are no copepods in our water, you know what it means? It means the water is toxic. It means there's poison in the water. The people who know from these things could not be happier. There could not be a better indication that we live in a healthy environment if there are indeed copepods in the water. Now, that creates a halachic challenge. What is a halachic challenge? If the copepods get too big, that they're near Eleinayim, it's a problem. Is it a problem? So this is a machlekes apoiskim, according to Rybelski and his machane, that he considers the piping, not going the whole shiur on the whole sugya over here, all of the piping system and the entire, the whole mahalach to be the mokoyim, mechubel lekarka, it's the mokoyim where these copepods have developed, and it's permitted to consume them. Mamish, to consume them. Whereas according to other paiskim, no, they have a different understanding of how the reservoir system works. They consider there to be some type of separation between the place of where they came from and when they developed. Not for now, this is big sugya in and of itself. And they consider it to be a halachic issue, and therefore they advise that a person lechatchila should put a filter on their sink? Is it mamash? Are you mechuyev to do so? You go basaroyev. Most of the time, 95% of the time, you're not going to find any copecards. Are you mechuyev because of the 5% of the time, maybe copecard, we may drink it. Okay, that's another sugya. Okay, we're not getting into the sugya. What? Do I use a filter on Shabbos? Is Adab using a filter can cause a person to die because the filters, the metal parts dissolve, and instead in the Chamira Sakanta Yosem Esura, we're not going into sugi in and of itself. The point I just want to make over here is a copper card is a Sheret Samayim. There's no doubt about it. If you take this Sheret Samayim out of your water and you put it on the countertop and then you want to eat it, you violated multiple Isurim. Okay, there is a way, even according to those who do not require a filter, there are ways where you can violate many Isuri Deraisa. Even according to the Digas Makilim, if you know what you're doing, you can end up being many, many Isurim. So it's a halachic issue. It's a halachic issue. But one thing is for sure, it is a Simen Bracha. That's what it is. There's no doubt about it. It's a Simen Bracha, which means it is the ultimate indicator that the water is fresh. The water is healthy. There is no poison. There are no toxins because the copecards are super duper sensitive and they're the first things to die when there is some small amount of poison in the water. Okay, so it's a Simen Bracha. Make no mistake about it. Therefore, that is a dogma for the Arvei Nachal. The Arvei Nachal is the willow. Is the willow. The willow, Chazal say, the willow is a garnished. Nothing. No tam, v'lon l'reach. Does not produce fruit, and does not have any fragrance, and it's a shvach, it's a very weak, feeble thing. But you know what it is? It's an indication that there's water. It's an indication that we're living in a society where there's water. There's what to drink. Now today you'll tell me this whole world is a crazy world because our Arvei Nachal have come about 6,000 miles away. They've come, who knows where they've come, we don't even know where they came from. Okay, alright, it's a kasha. But the point is, the fact that you have Arvei Nachal is an indication that you're living in a society where there's bracha, there's water. So even though in and of itself is not worth very much, it's like the kobo cards, it's a simen bracha. So each one, that is a cause for joy. So the esrog is easy. Ah, esrog, beautiful. Okay, if you have sensitivity to nature, you look at an esrog, wow. Alamailas, tam, reach, it's beautiful. Lulav. First of all, it's nice, tall stick. Give someone a good set. You can give someone a weapon. Chazal say it's a weapon. But it's fruit. If there's a if there is a branch of a palm tree, with the branch means there is actually fruit. There is it's part of the product of that branch is a fruit. The dates are delicious. And then we have the hadasim. It's reach, fragrance. Maybe today the fragrance. It has to be that the fragrance that comes from hadasim today is probably a teeny fraction of what it used to be. Okay, you can probably become intoxicated in time of Chazal by inhaling the fragrance of Hadassim. Today the world has been depleted from the nutrients that bring forth high quality fruit. So but what about the Arava? Where is the Simcha in the Arava? The Simcha is not per se the object, but the fact that it's an indicator. It's an indicator that there is mayim and there's no greater bracha than having mayim. Yeah.
A lot of people adapted by aerobics get by the water. From that water.
The Arvei Nachal. From Munsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Munsi is the... Okay. Arvei Nachal is red stems. So Arvei, in fact, what's so interesting is that the entire Yom Tov of Sukkot is the entire Yom Tov of Sukkot, we dwell upon the Arava. Okay, the Arava is what we take on Hashanah. Okay, everybody's Arava we take on Hashanah Rabbah. And everything we're mispallah for the entire Sukkot is Geshen. Geshen, which is the Arava. It's just an indicator. It's an indicator, like you know the stock market, they give out the indicators, they give out the news, these are the indicators of the health of the market. Indicators speak volumes. This is the indicator. And this is what we focus on very much on the Yom Tov of Sukkot, and therefore it's Ein Hachinami. These four things are Usimachtem. You know, in the stock market, when they release good news, when they come out, I don't know what all these fancy things are, but all these reports, there's a report of unemployment, a report of GDP growth, and there's a report for this, a report for that. These are indicators. And if it's good news, in the stock market, they're all clapping, they're all cheering, and everyone is buying, and the stock market goes up. What is the indicator? Look at the Arava. Look at the Arava. Is the Arava fresh, or is the Arava shvach? If the Arava is shvach, it means unemployment is sky high. It means we're on the verge of a recession, a chas v'shalom, a depression. If the Arava is geshmak, what's geshmak about an Arava? There's nothing to offer. It's an indicator. If the indicator is good, usimachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem. Okay, this was Jewish. I won't do it on halacha. But there are four different things that it says usimachtem. We have a contradiction. The pasuk begins by telling us we should do on the first day, and then the pasuk says do it on the seventh day. Who asked this kasha? The Gemara asked this question. What does the Gemara answer? It depends where. When the pasuk says ulakachtem lochem, lochem means each individual, no matter where he is, America, Europe, Eretz Yisrael, wherever you are, everyone shall take the lulav and eshagwen, ulakachtem lochem bayoim horishoin. It starts and stops on day one. Vzehu. There is no mitzvah in Atari to take lulav and eshagwen on day two, the cholamoid, second of Yom Tov, it's over. Oh, what about what it says, l'shivas yamim? Well, the words there say, l'smachtem lifnei Hashem, which means in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Beis HaMikdash, there is a mitzvah, the Araisa, to take the lulav and esrog all 7 days. Some hold that applies even bisman hazeh, even though there is no, we don't go on the harbais, not for now, not going into that sugya, but even the koisel hamaravi, the Koisel Hamaravi, the environment, the old city, has a din bizman hazeh of usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim. And therefore, for this reason, many people in Eretz Yisrael, they make it their business to go to the Koisel Hamaravi every single day of Sukkos with their lulav and esrog in order to be mekayim a mitzvah de'oraisa of usmachtem lefnei Hashem Elokeichem shivas yomim. Okay, if you're living in Chutz Yaretz, the only time you can make the mitzvah thereby is the first day. Ulekachtem lochem. If you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you can make it all 7 days. Now there's a big machloikis apoiskim. That applies bizman. What does it mean? Lefnei Hashem. Some say lefnei Hashem means only when there is a real Beis HaMikdash up and running, and the korbanos are being offered, and you're inside of the Azara. Some say, no, that's not what it means. Lefnei Hashem means, it means even in Yerushalayim. The whole Yerushalayim can be called Lifnei Hashem, even without a Beis HaMikdash, certainly the old city by the Koisel HaMaravi. And therefore, if you go to the Koisel HaMaravi with a lulav and esrog on Chol HaMoed, all 7 days, you mekayim a mitzvah deraisa. And I told you, there are many people that do this who are able to do so. They live close enough to the Koisel. And they go, G'dayla Yisrael, even the G'dayla Yisrael.
It's even more important when the first day is on Shabbos, right?
Oh, so here's the issue. What about when the first day is on Shabbos? Sorry, I'm not mistaken that the time of the Beis HaMikdash, everyone took the lulav and esrog on the first day, Sukkot, even when it was Shabbos Kodesh. Which means the takana Shema Yavirenu, Dalet Amos Bereshus, you may come to carry in the street, was not in force in the earliest time, and they took it since a one day mitzvah. See, today we do it for today we'll explain. Today we do it for 7 days, even the Chutz Liaretz. But in the time of Chazal, when they only did it for 1 day, outside, you only have 1 day, it's the only chance to do it. So then Chazal did not restrict you from taking a lulav and esrog on Shabbos. You have to be careful. You know how to carry. You have to make sure they trusted people to be careful, to learn the halachas, the rabbanim, to teach the people to make sure not to carry your lulav and esrog in the street. So what did that mean? Did that mean that you brought your Levanesha to shul before they daven in shuls? I don't know how society was. We don't know how society was set up in ancient times, but it was certainly not like today. That's the way it used to be. Then what happened? The Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and in the Beis Hamikdash we were thrown out of Yerushalayim. There was nothing happening in Yerushalayim. So there was the mitzvah of taking the lulav and eshrei was not being fulfilled for 7 days lifnei Hashem. So Chazal stepped in. It is very, very critical to understand this point, to appreciate what the mitzvah is. You can go many, many years without not understanding this point. Chazal stepped in and they said, everyone now, being that we no longer have a Beis Hamikdash, and the mitzvah deraisa of usmachtem lifnei Hashem ulakechem shivas yamim is not being fulfilled. Therefore, everyone today, the new Takonas Chazal, Zecher Lemikdash. Everyone should take the Dalet Minim all 7 days. Zecher Lemikdash. Now, the reason why I emphasize that is there are only a handful number of mitzvahs, if even that you can say about them, Zecher Lemikdash. And in fact, when you say do the mitzvah, you should think about that it's Zecher Lemikdash. And one of them is a very basic fundamental mitzvah, which many of us forget to think about, is Lulav and Esrei. The classic mitzvah that you'll hear people saying Zecher Lemikdash is Sfiras HaOmer. Koreich, Zecher Lemikdash, Kehillel, okay, Einachanan, but it's a little bit different, okay, that's a minute, okay, fine. That's true. Koirech, Matzah, Pesach, Matzah, Mar Biachad. Okay, but even there we don't do it exactly because we don't have the Pesach. But I think the more classic mitzvah that many of us associate with Zecher LeMikdash is counting Sefiras HaOmer. There really is no need to count Sefiras HaOmer B'Zman HaZeh whatsoever because we don't bring the Omer. We don't bring the Omer, we don't bring the Shtei Lechem. So why in the world are we counting from something that we never did? What is the answer? It's a mitzvah derabanan zecher lemikdash.
Did they do this in Yavne
when there was Bezdin? In Yavne, when they made the takana, I don't know exactly. No, I don't think so. When Bezdin relocated to Yavne, they were still functioning. The Beis Hamikdash was still functioning. The Lishkasag, the Bezdin decided they didn't want to be there in that area for different reasons, but the Mikdash was still in operation. I think it was after the Churban. It must have been after the Churban. In Beitar.
During
the Churban. During the Churban. So what does that mean? It means the day after the Churban or the year after, 10 years after? Whatever it is. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I don't know.
Is it washing your hands before eating a motzi?
Truma, Slach Truma. No, that was true even during the time. Because even Bizman Hazemi Ikar Hadin is Truma. We don't eat truma today bizman hazeh because kohanim are not necessarily miyuchasim. It's tamei, but even when the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, even technically bizman hazeh today, theoretically it's possible to eat truma. You have to have paraduma water, okay? So that they had until there's a claim they had paraduma water until the time of the Amoraim. In other words, they want to say it's very off topic. Is that the you know why the Shas is so successful? The Talmud Bavli. You know why it's still with us today, over almost 1,500 years later?
Arthur.
You know why it's still with us today? It's because the people who wrote the Shas, people who composed the Shas, compiled the Shas, Rina Rav Ashi, and the Amoraim that are the ones that elaborated, they learned the Tahara with the water of the Para Aduma. The Amoraim had the ashes of the Para Aduma, and they purified themselves regularly, and when they learned Torah, they learned Torah b'tahara, in a state of purity, and therefore, when you learn b'tahara, that has an impact upon the person, and there's a siyata d'shmaya which allows the written word to last forever. It gave koyach to the koyach of the Talmud Bavli. They say there's a lot of stuff on this about learning b'tahara. There's a hakpada that if you give a shir, if you lane, I tell you this many times, if someone does a public service, so you should go to mikvah. even though the average person is not makbid, it's not nisar in tfilas ezra, there's no tara bisman ezer from tumas meis, that's impossible. But there is other types of tahara which do have an effect, that's tfilas ezra. Tfilas ezra.
Why not
put tumas meis? We're a paraduma water. There's no paraduma. Now, they say there's no problem. But there's other types of Tara that's going to Tfilas Ezra. So most people are not Nizar in this. And there's not, you're not a Chuyiv too. There's no Chuyiv to be Nizar in these things. Not at all. Yet, there is an Inyan of doing this. So should a person exert himself to be Machmer on these things? Not necessarily, but it's said over, I think Rav Pam used to say this over, if I'm not mistaken, maybe others as well, is that if you do something as a public servant, if you're a Baal Kriya, if you give a Daf Yomi Shir, if you give any Shir, you're certainly a Baal Tokeya, something like that, you do something for the Tzibur, then you should feel the need or the obligation, not Mechuyev, to go to mikvah for Tzvilas Ezra. Sefer Torah. You're not mechuyev. They asked, right? It depends where. It depends who and where. Not every kehila do they demand it. They did demand it. Some do. Not all do either. Not all. Not every chassid goes to mikvah every single for Tzvilas Ezra. They go. They go whenever they can go. It all depends. It varies. Also, you know, some people, doctors don't let them go. Doctors don't let them go. Cellulitis. They don't let them go. I know people that will not go into a mikvah. They're done. That's it. They've been there, done that, no more.
Antibiotics.
Finished. Antibiotics, not for everyone. Okay, it's not so simple.
Like the Litvak said on Erev Yom Kippur, last year the mikvah was warmer.
Last year it was warmer? I don't get it.
Once a year that he goes to the mikvah.
Oh, once a year. Okay. How do you know last year? All right, whatever it is, but going back to our topic, Bizman, now that there was a churmes hamigdash, so Chazal were mesakein zecher lemikdash that we should take lulav and esrog all 7 days, no matter where we are. Once they were mesakein that we should take it for 7 days. So if you do not take it on Shabbos, although you're not going to be able to mekayim the mitzvah d'oraisa of Yom Rishon, but being that you will still at least be mekayim the mitzvah midrabanan on the other 6 days, zecher lemikdash, that's why they stepped in and they said, do not take it on Shabbos. If the only time we would take the lulav and eshek would be Shabbos, Chazal did not want to take that away from us. Legamri. Even like, look at shofar. I mean, we don't blow shofar the first day of Rosh Hashanah when it's Shabbos. Why not? How can Chazal Shema Yavi Renu? So what? It's a mitzvah d'oraisa. So you say the chacham can be oiker b'sheva al taseh. Okay, they can, but should they be oiker b'sheva al taseh? Well, part of the answer is being that since today it's accepted that there can always be 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, even in Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, if we're not going to blow shofar on the first day, you'll blow shofar on the second day. It's not going to be forgotten from you, the mitzvah of shofar. So since it will not be forgotten from us, we're going to blow on the second day. So here, Chazal will say we're going to take advantage of our power of sheva al taseh to be oiker a dover min ha-Torah. But originally, if there was only one day of Rosh Hashanah, then no, Chazal are not going to go and tell you not to do it on Shabbos because you might come to carry. They'll tell you, be careful and don't carry. Say that when it comes to Lulav and Esrog, originally when we took Lulav and Esrog on the first day, then Chazal said you should not take the Lulav, you can take it on the first day because that's the only chance you're going to have to do the Lulav and Esrog. But now, Bizman Hazeh, when we have 7 days, because Chazal enacted Zecher Lemikdash, therefore, since you have the other 6 days, Chazal stepped in and they used their power of being Oiker, Dominat Torah.
In Eretz Yisrael, they did in Yerushalayim only. They did blow. So why?
No. They did blow. What do you mean on Shabbos?
On Shabbos.
On Shabbos. You have to know which Tekufa. Which Tekufa that was. And the people, I don't know the Gemara. You have to go to the sugya. You're right. Okay, you're right. You are correct. I don't know the sugya. It's not our main point now. You're right. I don't know. It's not the main point now. But in Echnam, but the point of what we want to make over here is that Bizman Hazeh, the main thing we want to focus on over here is we should remember, and in some places can say you should actually be mechaving this, when you take the lulav on the 6 days of Yom Tov, you should be mechaving, this is a unique mitzvah. It's not just a mitzvah of taking lulav and eshug. This is a mitzvah of a mayor.
Yeah.
This, good morning, how are you? Gemar Toiv. A Gemara Toiv, a good Ben Shliar. How are you?
Thank you, I'm fine.
How is your Yom Kippur? Have a good Yom Kippur?
Good.
Okay, good. It's good to see you. Gemara Toiv, a Gemara Toiv.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. When you come, it's sunshine here.
Cloudy day. Don't run for president.
What? Don't run for president? No, this is not this is the real deal. The real deal. So therefore, halacha l'maisa, when you take the lulav and eshug on the 6 days, you mishtosi mechavein zeicher l'mikdash, even though you're not eating koirech, that's what it's all about. It's a very fascinating thing. How many mitzvahs do we have that are done l'zeicher l'mikdash? Okay, now let's discuss very briefly some of the different halachas.
When the Mari Beirav wanted to reinstitute...
Yes, the smicha.
He wanted that in Tzfas they should blow shofar too.
Oh, in Tzfas, the new Yerushalayim.
No, because what do you call it?
It's the Bezdin, Yavne. Okay, that's a chiddush. Okay, I hear. Okay, now let's now discuss some of the basic halachas about basic halachas about. First of all, the important halacha is the lulav and esrog muksa on Shabbos Chol Hamoyed. What is the halacha? Everyone always gets confused with this issue. The answer is the lulav, the hadasim, and the aravos are definitely muksa, without question. So why? It's set aside for a mitzvah, and there's nothing else you can do with it. There's nothing else. What are you going to do with it? What are you going to do with the lulav and the lulav, the hadasim, and the aravos on Shabbos Chol Hamoed?
That's how you could smell.
Oh, well, what? Smell what? The hadasim? There's no smell. Our hadasim do not have any smell. They don't. They don't have any smell. Yeah, I don't know. You have to crush it. You have to what?
You hang around the wrong neighborhood.
The wrong neighborhoods. Okay, there are. He has a whole interesting thing. There are two different types of hadasim. There's the Teimani hadasim, and then there's the different little. But our hadasim do not produce fragrance. You have to crush them. It has to be crushed. Okay, but it's not until you can't crush it. You're not allowed to crush it.
Maybe they crush before Shabbos.
You're not allowed to crush it on Shabbos, so there's no purpose. Therefore, it is definitely muksa. There's nothing more to discuss. Now, what about the esrog? Rabbis, are you allowed to eat the esrog? Eat the esrog on Shabbos Chol Hamoed? No, you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to. Why not? Because you have designated it for the mitzvah of the Dalet Minim, and even though you'll tell me that Choser is kosher on Chol Hamoed, that's only a bidyevet. It's not a lichatchila to walk around shul during a Shanis taking a bite out of your esrog. It's an apple. Okay, it's not an apple. You don't take a bite. It's not a lichatchila. Okay, so you don't go eat esrogim on Yom Tov. It's not the right thing to do. So therefore, you can't. What's the other option? To smell it. Are you allowed to smell an esrog? Yes. Can you make a bracha? Yes. There's a special bracha. Asher nosan reach toiv baperos. There's a special bracha you make when you smell fruit. Does the esrog qualify for that bracha? Tough question. If you're a connoisseur, if you appreciate the smell, yes, you can make the bracha. If you're like me, and to you, you don't even know what you're smelling, you smell an esrog, do I really enjoy smelling the esrog? Do I really can tell the difference between an esrog and an apple, an orange, another citrus fruit? Me, I can't talk to anyone but myself, not really. I'm not from the mumchim and from the people who appreciate the finer things in life. The finer things in life to appreciate the smell of an esrog. So for me, I think the poskim advise, don't make a bracha. Should I smell it? Maybe, yeah, you want to smell, you don't want to smell, but even if you do smell it, you know, you don't have to make the bracha. Asher nosan reach toiv baperos. This is an acquired taste. Just like when it comes to acquired smell. And it comes to good wine, okay, good dry wine. It's not going to happen. The moment you come into this world, you're going to have an appreciation for some aged, quality, dry wine. It's an acquired taste. It takes skill. It takes practice. It takes work in order to enjoy the finer things in life. And until you get to that point, you don't make special brachas. So too, when it comes to the fragrance of the esrog, unless you really appreciate it. Now, therefore, that may very well be a nafka mina if the esrog is muksa. If you are from those people who will make a bracha when they smell the esrog, asher nosan reachta beperos, then the esrog is not a muksa on Shabbos. If you are from those people for whom the esrog is just like an apple and the fragrance is nothing special and you're not going to be making a bracha, then the bottom line is the esrog was set aside for a mitzvah. It is no different than the lulav and the esrog, and therefore it should not be handled on Shabbos. It becomes muksa. So this is the bottom line. The lulav, hadasim, arevos are muksa. There's no, you have no use for it whatsoever. It's muksa machmas mitzvosai, and there's no use. You may not move it on Shabbos. The esrog is a question mark. Some will use it, some will not. It really borders on the fact that the esrog is something which has a permissible use on Shabbos, even when you're not doing the mitzvah, being smelling it. But some of the modern-day poskim tell us that the average person does not get any thrill out of smelling an esrog to the point where he does not make, where we see that people are not running to make brachos when they smell esrogim. Therefore, if you're from that category, the logic is it should be muksa. Is it mamish muksa? Could we tell you that it's mamish muksa? Not necessarily, because in Shulchan Aruch it says that it's not muksa because it has a reach. However, things have changed today. Where do you draw the line? When does halacha change? That's the age-old question of when halacha changes with the common, the way people live. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. It's a very complex issue. Bottom line is that l'chatchila, it would be better not to move the muksa, the esrog on Shabbos, as it was muksa. B'diavad, if you want to move it, you can move it. It's not muksa. Okay, let's go to the next topic. Running out of time. Next topic, let's discuss. I'm going to go to the end. Okay, is it okay with everyone? Or you want to take a break?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go now to, let's discuss some of the laws of the esrog. Let me give you just the terms. It's really impossible to go, it takes years and a lot of skill to learn how to inspect a kosher esrog, but let's at least be familiar with some of the terms. If anyone tells you it's a chazazis, run out of that store like a plague. You show the esrog to one of the people behind the counter. What is this? Oh, it's kosher. It's a chazazis. I've heard this in the store. It's a chazazis. If he says that to you, you know you're in the wrong store. Because you will not find what's called a chazazis in the store. A chazaz basically means an appendage. It means something abnormal has grown on the esrog. Okay, it's a what? Whatever. I don't want to use that's such a harsh word. It means something abnormal has grown on the esrog, which was not meant to be there, due to some whatever it is, something which went wrong when it developed in the orchard. So that is it possible? Not possible is a very big shaila. It's not necessarily possible, but one thing is for sure, it's not going to make its way to the market. It will be nipped in the bud because it doesn't look normal. It doesn't look normal. It looks very, very strange to have an appendage. An appendage, something like some type of...
It doesn't have beauty, is that it?
It's, is it hadar? Not necessarily. It can still be hadar, but it's something which is a real appendage. And it's not possible. Is it hadar? Maybe not. Maybe it's not hadar. Hadar is in the eyes of the beholder. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder in this regard, in this instance. There are some things that are in the eyes of Shulchan Aruch, and there are some things that are in the eyes of the beholder. But a chazazis, as far as the Shulchan Aruch is concerned, it's okay, it's kosher. And indeed, it may even be hadar, but it does not. It's not going to sell in the market. It will never make its way into the store. You'll never see in the meicher selling it. So that word is out. What you will hear is a blet, a bleta. And what is a bleta? A bleta is a Yiddish word. A bletel is a Yiddish word for leaf. Blattl means an ola, a leaf. A leaf. That means that the leaf was touching the esrog as it was growing in the orchard, and it caused some type of discoloration. It caused the skin, the very surface of the skin, to be slightly discolored than the rest of the esrog. That is fine. That is not called.
What do you have to check for?
Okay, so let's discuss. Okay, so let's talk about the terminology first. Okay, then we'll come back. Okay, yoroik, we'll come back to you. Yoroik means green. If it's too green, right, what does it mean too green? Too green means a very dark green. That is not advisable. That means that it's not been developed. It's like a premature. It was cut off the tree.
It can't ripen.
They're very dark. Now, a lot of esrogen are green. Today it's very popular. In fact, if it's a little bit green, it's good. It means it's fresh. It means it's not going to turn red by the end of Yom Tov. But it's a light green. A light green is good. If it's a very dark green, that is something which Chazal say is no good. Obviously, if it's too red, if it's sohoif, another term.
Apple.
You put in a brown bag, and an apple, and the chemical, somehow the apple has a koyach to a chemical reaction. Okay, so there's the blattl, there is yoroik, sohov, there is the term called the chazozis, which we don't see today. We have choser. Choser means something is missing. Now, what does it mean, choser? This is an important point. If you take a toothpick and you stick it into the esrog and you pull it out, is the esrog choser?
No.
No, you didn't, what? So you made a hole in it. All of the flesh, all of the meat is there. It's just been compressed. It's been pushed inside. You have not actually taken anything out. So taking a toothpick and thrusting it into the esrog, let's say it falls on the floor, and something gets stuck into it, and you pull it out, that is not called choser. Choser is only when you take something out. If you've just compressed it by sticking something inside, that is not called choser. Okay, then there's niklaf. What happens if the esrog has been peeled? Now, there are four different layers in an esrog. There is the outer surface, which is paper thin, not even paper thin, which gives it its shine.
The rind.
Okay, and under the rind is the thick white. That's the third level, and then the fourth level is the area where the seeds are found. So where the seeds are found, that's the panemius. Then there is the very thick white. And then outside the white, there is another layer which also has a thickness to it. And then there is the very, very, very top surface. That is cool. That's the klipa. So the question is, if you peel the klipa, is the esrog still kosher? So the answer is it's kosher. It is kosher. Just because the esrog has been slightly peeled and very, very, very thin, it's very, very hard to differentiate. You have to have a real expert to explain to you, show you when only the klipa, only the very outer surface has been peeled and not any part of the next level. If it has part of it is peeled, it is still kosher. The more you learn about esrogim, the more you're shocked to learn how many esrogim are really kosher. It's very hard to find an esrog that's truly possible. Even if the pitum falls off, most poskim hold, if the pitum falls off, it's kosher. Okay, the only time when a pitum falls off that it's possible chol adeus is when it falls off to such a degree where it leaves a cavity in the esrog. If you take off the pitum, and by taking off the pitum there is mamish a cavity in the esrog, then it's possible chol adeus. But let's say the pitum comes up, and then something on the top falls off, the sheshanta. That's the part. The sheshanta is the hard wood that, like a mushroom, sprouts like a mushroom. If that falls off, it's interesting, we wouldn't touch it, right? If you're in the Moicha Esrog and you see the Shashanta, and it fell off right next to it, would you take that Esrog? No, it's possible. It's not possible. It's kosher according to almost all opinions.
Is it
Mehudu? Yeah, it's Mehudu, yeah. In fact, he writes over here, right? Tezner, he writes that if you have an Esrog that the Shashanta fell off and it's Mehudu, it's beautiful. And the other option is to take another esrog, which is perfect, the Sheshan did not fall off, and it's not as Mehudar, better take the Eshreik, which the Sheshanta fell off in the store, than to take the Eshreik that's not as nice. It's not as nice. It's very nice what he says, but I have a feeling that 99% of the population will not buy it, will not feel comfortable buying the Eshreik that's missing even the Sheshanta. Again, the Sheshanta is the top of the Eshreik, the very top of the Pitum, which mushrooms, that it's hardwood of mushrooms. Then there's the lower portion, there's the part of the stick. I don't know all the different terms. There's what's called the dad. Under the Sheshanta is the dad. So if the stick is, it's like a stem, it's a different term. Now if that dad breaks, it cracks and falls off, so it's that's more of a problem. It's not necessarily possible. There are many opinions in the Rishonim in this matter. It's more possible, of course, than just when the Sheshanta falls off, but it's still b'di'evet kosher. You can still b'di'evet make a brach upon an Eshreik that the dad fell off.
The Sheshanta is not really part of the Eshreik?
No, we treat as part of the Eshreik. We treat the Sheshanta, everything that's attached to the Eshreik when you cut it off, is part of the Eshreik. Obviously, the ultimate hiddur is that the Sheshanta should still be attached to the Eshreik, but if the Sheshanta falls off, it's still kosher for sure. If the dad falls off, that is much more of a shaila. You should not make a bracha unless this is the only Eshreik left in the entire world. And then underneath that is the next section of the pitim, and it varies upon different Eshreikim. And when if that portion falls off, the question is, will it leave a cavity in the top of the Eshreik? If it will leave a cavity by taking it out, by falling off, yes, it is definitely possible. Now most Eshreikim years ago, from Eretz Yisrael, came years ago, not anymore today, came without pitums. And it's a fact that it was accepted that an Eshreik that grew without a pitum, when I say grew without a pitum, means that the pitum falls off early in its development, was an indication that this Eshreik is a miyuchas. It's naki mimurkov. It has not been grafted with lemons or other citrus fruits in order to give it strength. That's what it used to be years ago in Eretz Yisrael. That no longer is the case. Pitums fall off as they grow in either one of two different states of development. They fall off either very early in the development, they fall off, and some of them fall off later in the development. Those that fall off in the early state of development, we call it stage 1 and stage 2, are kosher l'chol hadeis. There's no question about its kosher, and adrabah, the esrogim that had a reputation as being the miyuchasim, the ones that had a tradition, a legacy, that these have not been grafted, are pure, pure Eshreik fruit with nothing mixed in. Indeed, those Eshreikim had a tendency for the pitum to fall off in the very, very early stage of its development. Now, then there are Eshreikim where the pitum falls off in the second stage, in the later stage of development. Halacha lemaisa, the vast majority of poskim are of the opinion that it's 100% kosher. However, there are minority opinions that disagree. The whole that if it falls off in the second state of development, it's possible. It's possible and should not be used.
Yeah, but
again, we don't possible.
The
mumchim can tell. You can tell. Those who are in the business can show. You have to have pictures. I don't know myself. How many pictures? They can look at an estrogen and they can tell you in a second by looking at it if this pitum fell off in the early state or fell off in the late state. They fell off. They can right away tell you which state they fell off. There's a minority opinion that says, Rishonim that say that you should not use an Eshreik whose pitum fell off in the later stages of development. Today, there's been such an expansion of the market in Eretz Yisrael. They've imported Eshreik from all over the world. This is no longer the case. It's probably now about 50-50. When you buy an Eshreik, 50% of the Eshreikim will have pitums, and 50 will not have pitums. And it doesn't mean anything. Just because it has a pitum does not mean that it's a bigger, better miyuchas. Adarab, it used to be that some of them that did not have pitums had a reputation, had a legacy being better miyuchasim.
The truth is that years ago, you were able to tell the Israeli Eshreikim in America.
Yes.
All had pitums.
The Israeli in America all had pitums?
Yeah, when they... talking about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And they only later, after the Six-Day War, when people realized that you have the Yisraigim without pitims were all Yanaver Yisraigim. And then after people started going to Eretz Yisrael and finding out, hey, most Israeli Yisraigim
do not have pitims.
Only then did they start bringing to America.
They're trying to fool us here. They were giving to America the Shvachas Chayra. The Shvachas Chayra was the ones that did have pitims. Why was it Shvachas Chayra?
You knew if it had a pitim, it was Israeli. If it didn't, it was...
Okay. Today we know nothing. Today one thing is for sure, we know nothing anymore. Because today the business has been expanded to such a degree... It's such a big business.
You can still tell a
Yanav, you can tell, right? Yanav, you can tell. You can tell, but it's the business, so therefore we really don't know from anything, and you have to really rely that whoever is selling you the Esrog is getting you an Esrog that has a tradition, has not been grafted. Because the Esrogim, there is a concern that they have grafted it with other fruits, other citrus fruits, in order to make them healthier, to make them stronger.
Where did they graft them?
Eretz Yisrael? Yeah. There's a lot of crime committed, unfortunately, in Eretz Yisrael also. All different types. Things were done out of ignorance, things were done, all different stories. So there is something to rely on. A chazonish, what's a chazonish esrog? They're selling you a chazonish. So supposedly... That this was from the same orchard from which the Chazon Ish purchased his personal esrog. So if it was good enough for the Chazon Ish to buy an esrog from this particular orchard, it must be the Chazon Ish held al pi ruach hakodesh that this orchard is the meyuchas. So what happened? So everyone took their esrog from that orchard and they let it sit in water until it sprouted roots. And they planted from every esrog a new orchard. Now we're living over here 70 years later. So we have hundreds of orchards all over the world that are called Chazon Ish. Because they all came from the one orchard where the Chazon Ish selected his personal esrog.
No, there's the left here, it says esrog.
That's another esrog.
That's the Chazon Ish had given to Reb Michael Yehuda.
But no more, they dried up. The day when after he died, it dried up. The old ones.
The grandchildren of those
Israelis. The grandchildren, other orchards. The Chabad, they're very good. The Chabad is showing them very nice.
They took the Rebbe's, it's not the Chabad. They took
the Rebbe's Eshigim itself.
And from that,
the Chabad Eshigim Yishnah, very nice. From Kfar Chabad. You'll see some.
The Kfar Chabad Eshigim probably originally came from... Yanaver, because Chabad had a tradition that where Rabbeinu Shleiman told Moshe Rabbeinu that to take an esrog, he flew al kafei
yisurim
to Yanav, and he showed him this is the esrog. And
that's it. That's the esrog. The Yanav esrog. Okay, you can get. It's like the Masorah. Rabbi Rakefet always says in Har Sinai, in which language did Hashem give the Torah? Yiddish. If you don't know that, you're not Bikiris. It's Pashto. Modern Torah was in Yiddish.
Moshe Rabbeinu wore a stride.
By the way, the term Yanaver, you know where
Genoa?
How it originated?
Yeah, how?
Genoa.
What does that mean?
It's a port in Italy where they
exported. Uh-huh. Okay. There were all different times. You have to...
All this, right, it used to come from Greece and Italy. Until in the early
1900s, and also Corfu.
There was a pogrom or something, and the Rabbanim in Europe made a cheirim. They made a cheirim that the people who can't ride from the anti-Semites.
Okay, whatever it is. You really need a reliable hechsher to know where it's coming from. Okay, just because they put in the box and they put a sticker, you should know. It's whatever. You have to really know what's going on. It's not so easy to find out what's going on. We trust everyone. Today we trust. I mean, what could be an Ehrlich person is selling you a story? And the truth is, he was fooled. You don't really know. It's good to get a handle on where is your esrog really coming from. They have some beautiful esrog from California. They have some beautiful, they have some orchards there, and it became, over the last couple of years, they've been producing some very, very high quality stuff in California.
Mexico also.
I think also in Florida they produce esrog, some very good high quality esrog. Now, also, it's very interesting. You buy from Eretz Yisrael. This is a very important thing. When you look for the Hechsher, you have to also, we always assume everything is fine and good. Make sure they were mafresh, trumois, umaisrois. Okay, they always talk about what happens in a Shemitah year. And a Shemitah year, the year after Shemitah, so then there's a whole discussion that you're not allowed to be nene, you're not allowed to do business, sechera, with the Paris of Shvius. It's not just a Shemitah year. Shemitah year, that's the issue. But in a regular year, you have to make sure when it comes from Eretz Yisrael, they have to be mafresh, truma, and maestros. Now, they don't give the truma to the kohen to eat, obviously, but it's just like all the other produce in the Eretz Yisrael, the mafresh, truma, and maestros. Sometimes they get so worked up, they have an orchard, and they collect all the good estrogen, and they can forget to be mafresh, trumois, and maestros. And in the fourth year, that could be a very big problem. There's a whole shayla that you're not yaitzei the mitzvah, because the mitzvah is not lochem. The esrog has to be possible for you to eat, theoretically. If you cannot eat this esrog, if you did not designate it for a mitzvah, you cannot use it for a mitzvah. Therefore, if this esrog is tevel, you're not mafresh truma semaisrois, it's not something which is yours. It's not something which you can say it's even lochem. Ulekachtem lochem bayoim harishon. It's not mine. In this esrog, there is a taruvis, a mixture of truma and meiser that does not belong to me. You cannot necessarily be yoytze. Now, what about orla? The first 3 years when they plant esrogim, you're not allowed to be nene from the esrogim. The first 3 years is orla. Okay, and the fourth year is Neter Revai. Neter Revai has to be redeemed like it's Meiser Sheni. And there also, the Mafresh Trumas and Meisers is Meiser Sheni, and there's also Meiser, the big problem is Meiser Oni. In the third year of the Shemitah cycle, which we do today as well, in the third and sixth year, you have to give some of the proceeds of the Esroigim to poor people. That, even though we don't give it to Kehanim because they're Tomei, and we don't give it to Levim, because no one today has a shtar miyuchas, the city is a levi for sure, but when it comes to ani, unfortunately, we have a lot of aniyim miyuchasim, unfortunately, out there. And therefore, that is why these things have to be taken care of. So if you look carefully on the box of an esrog that has come from Eretz Yisrael, look in the small print to see if it says that truma, meiser, Orla, Neter Revai, Meiser Sheni, Meiser Oni, all of these things have been handled, have been taken care of. If these things have not been taken care of, there can be a real chashash that the esrog is not kosher for you to make a bracha on. It is not called lochem. It has to be something which is yours. If you have an obligation to give truma and meiser, it's not yours. It's not yours. There's someone else that has possession, that has a chilek in this esrog, and it's a problem. If it's orla, orla the first 3 years, orla is osur behana. You're not allowed to derive benefit. Whoever sold it to you has in violation of deriving benefit from orla. And you are using this, you're deriving benefit from something which you may not derive benefit, and that includes also a mitzvah. Even though we say a rule of mitzvah is lavli honeis nenu, does not apply in every single situation, and does not apply when it comes to an esrog and a lulav and all of these things.
Okay, I think about the worker. I don't know if you can be saying that, but all the esrogim that come out of Eretz Yisrael come with a certificate from the Israeli Department of Agriculture that this.
The certificate is there are no bugs, there are no diseases, there is
right,
no.
But
that's not a certificate on mice and tumor.
This citrus, whatever it's called, it gives it the genus of the fruit.
There is no
so
contamination.
Is not a lemon genus, it's or an orange genus.
It doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. It means what today in society, what's considered to be an esrog, it's called an esrog. But it does not mean that the Israeli government is not coming to vouch that maybe 100 years ago this esrog was murkav, was grafted with a lemon or something along those lines in order to be mechazik, to strengthen it. So that's not a right. Just because they give you a certificate, all it means is that in society we accept this to be a citron, but it doesn't necessarily mean that halachically it's kosher. Okay, the other issue with the esrogim is that what about what makes a kosher apostle? That's the main thing over here is the top third. He writes here, it's not really the top third, it's the top half. It's from where the Eshek begins to incline, to get smaller. The way you look at an Eshek is you hold it at arm's length, not with a microscope, with a loop, right? Now with a loop, you don't have to look with a loop like this, with all the pictures in the FJJ. Okay, you're looking at the FJJ, they show you the old Gedolim, you don't have to do that. The way is like this. You hold it at arm's length. Does it look clean to you? Does it look good to you? Yeah, it looks yellow. It looks clean to you. It's kosher. Like I told you, it's almost impossible to find a non-kosher Eshrak. Almost impossible. You want to be mahader, hidurim. Okay, that's another story. At arm's length, do you see on the top third, do you see any white or black dots? White is very rare. You're not going to find white. Black. Do you see any black dots? Nope, I don't see any black dots. If I go like this, maybe I'll find the black dots.
You want a toothpick to take.
What? Yeah. Oh, you go toothpick, you can make it, you can ruin it. You can make it chaser by using a toothpick. So don't let them just use toothpicks to satisfy you and sell you the Brooklyn Bridge with the toothpick. And the better technique is wax. They should use wax. They take wax. If it's really dirt and it's not, they don't need a toothpick. You take like wax and you put the wax on. The Eshek gets sticky, the wax, and if it's really dirt, when you pull the wax off, the dirt will come out. When you put the wax and the dirt is not coming off, you know what? I'm Michael, your toothpick. Your toothpick, you'll probably puncture it, and make it chaser, and make it worse. Either buy it the way it is, with the black dot, and it's kosher, because at arm's length, you're not going to find any black dots, I'm sorry.
What is a black dot?
A black dot is a natural formation on the Eshrog. If it's natural, it should be kosher, right? It should be kosher. The only excuse is that in ancient times, in ancient times, it didn't have black dots. That's the way it is. Why today, all of a sudden, are there black dots? Maybe go ask the global warming people. It's because I don't know why the Eshrogim today come with microscopic black dots. And years ago, they didn't. It was considered to be an abnormality. It was an abnormality, and therefore, it's not the tzura. If you see a black dot, it's nearly a nayim. You should not buy that Eshrog. On the lower third, only three black dots. Only three black dots is problematic. Less than three dots. So that's the basic rule, is the top, the cleaner it is, the most important thing is it should be clean. The cleaner it is, the more mohuder it is. Black dots, if the black dots are teeny, they're so small, you have to look under a microscope, you don't have to think about that. If at arm's length you don't see black dots, it's for sure kosher. If you want to be mahada, you want to go the extra mile and get mamish to pay $300 for an Eshrog, they'll sell you one that's completely knocky. There's absolutely no black dots whatsoever on the entire upper half of the Eshrog and has a beautiful shape. It's symmetric, and there are blitois, there are shurois, and the ukits corresponds, the stem of the bam corresponds to the pitum. Now, the pitum also can have black dots. It's also no good. If there's black dots on the dad, that is also the same issue, the same problem. And one thing to be very careful about is that if the pitum, the dad of the pitum is dry, that happens sometimes. That's yovish. If you have, you're not going to find an eshrog that's yovish. You're not going to sell it to you. A yovish, an eshrog that's dry, it's shriveled. From last year, maybe, not from this year. But what does happen, it's common sometimes, is where the pitum becomes yavish. If the top of the pitum you see already has begun to shrivel, dried out, that happens. You can find them on the market, in the store, some of the pitums. So even though it looks yellow, it looks nice, there's no black dots, but you see already it's dry, that's no good. That's already called yavish, yeah.
What is the more kosher? A smooth one or...
Bumpy, blitois, for sure, blitois. Blitois is a zmuhudu. If it has blitois, the blitois should be symmetrical. Blitois. Blitois, bumps. Of course, if it has blitois, that is definitely a hider. The yan of the Esraigim, they don't have blitois. They're very shvach and blitois. Some of them are very, very plain. They're very smooth. That's
the Barak and the Esraigim also are very
smooth. That's a The Yanavil, the Yemen, those are some gorgeous Ashrogim. If you get one of those, then you're really in business. The Yemen, from Yemen. They're not Yanava, they're from Yemen, from the Taimonim. From the Taimonim, I don't know how they go there because it's not going to go there. I don't know how in the world, I don't know how they get them out of there, but those are very good Ashrogim. They're beautiful, beautiful Ashrogim. They're really fantastic. They're clean, there's no dots, there's no black spots. They're very geschmack, and they claim.
You don't have to worry about Trumas and Maisus.
Trumas and Maisus you have to worry about? You have to worry about getting killed.
You have to worry about terrorism.
About the Taliban. The Taliban, you got to worry about Al Qaeda. But also, the Yemenites, they have the biggest miyuchasim. Their traditions, there's no one more authentic. There's no one more authentic than the Yemenites. So if this is what they tell you with their sregim, you can trust. And they're available. They definitely are available out on the market. The Yemenite Esraigim, the Yemenite, the Moroccan, the Yanava, and then there are the Israeli Esraigim. There's a very long variety. Israeli, and then there are California Esraigim, which are very, very nice. Now, Lulavim, today the name of the game is the Dairy Lulavim. What are the Dairy Lulavim? The Dairy Lulavim are basically, I don't even know, they're a certain type of palm tree. What it basically means is it did not come from Egypt. That's really pretty much what it means. It used to be, and it still is, the vast majority of Lulavim came from Egypt. Egypt, whatever.
Sinai,
and they were good years ago, but it seems that, for some reason, over the last couple of years, the quality of the Egyptian Lulavim are not so great. So people have entered into the market, and they began producing Lulavim in Eretz Yisrael, in Florida, California,
Arizona,
and some of them are beautiful, beautiful lulavim, and they charge you a lot. Today, you should know, today the way the market has changed quite a bit. It used to be you buy an esrog, and they throw everything in for free. They throw in the lulav, the hadassim, the aravos, everything. No more. It's very rare now. Most places now, they sell you, everything is separate. They sell you an esrog, they sell you a lulav. Everything comes in a case. Lulav is separate. They come in a case, the fancy a sealed case with hechsherim, this and that. It's a very, very, very big business. Amcha Yisrael Shichim Parnasa. It's a very, very big business. In some places, the lulavim are more expensive than the esrogim. Hadassim became a fortune today. Okay, all different. They make you feel guilty. Oh, you're only going to get this sheet of hadassim. Believe me, your grandfather, the hadassim, the cheapest hadassim they're willing to give you for free are 50 times better than the hadassim that your grandparents used. And okay, so they make you feel guilty. Now, aravos is still on the street. One thing to be careful is not to buy aravos from a boy who was under bar mitzvah. The first day you need lochem. It has to belong to you. A boy under bar mitzvah does not have the power to sell you anything.
So what
do you mafker it? He has to be mafker it. Huh? He has to be mafker it.
When you bought it, is a shin or a shus?
No, it doesn't work like that. It's not so simple. Maybe according to the Rabbanan, there's no gezel, it's fine. But in order to be mahader in the mitzvah deraisa of lekachtem lochem, it is definitely not the ideal thing to buy aravos from a boy on the street who is under bar mitzvah. You should make sure he's a teenager. At least he's a teenager. Or you should buy from an adult.
It
doesn't matter. So he doesn't have a power to be the shliach. He cannot. A child cannot be a shliach. He can't do it. He cannot be the agent to sell it to you. He can't be. It's a problem. No matter how you look at it. And choshemish, but it works. Okay? It'll work. You don't have to go into Yom HaDin worrying Gezel. But in order to be Mekayim, the mitzvah derayis, it comes next Yom HaKippurim, you don't have to worry about Gozalnu, or I bought from a child. Forget about it. It's kosher, no question. But as far as the mitzvah derayis on the first day of Sukkot, where he needs lochem, technically speaking, it's a problem. It's a real halachic dilemma problem for you in order to purchase it from the child. Okay, so now, a lulav, the only thing that really counts for lulav is it should be the center branch. The center branch should be as close as possibly can be. Bidiyaved, as long as it's not roiv, it's also good. Even some say as long as it's not all the way down to the bottom. So it's almost impossible to find a lulav that's possible. It's almost impossible. However, the more it's closed, the better. So remember, you came out of here today learning two things. In Esrog, it's almost impossible to find the pasuk in Esrog that's pasuk. It's almost impossible. As long as you can hold it at arm's length and looks good, it's kosher. If you want muhudar, the cleaner, the better. Lulav, it's even more impossible to find the lulav that's pasuk. Really impossible. As long as if you have to make it pasuk, you have to take the center leaf and mamish all the way down to the bottom. No one's going to do that. You'll find it opened an inch, a half an inch, a quarter of an inch. You'll find very common. The kosher lechatchila kemat. Muhudr, it's sealed all the way to the top. It's sealed all the way. Hadasim, mishulashim. It should be each section, there should be three hadasim coming out in the same location, and they should reach to the next level. There should not be any gap. So all the hadasim today are really pretty good. They're some a little bit better, a little more of them, mishulashim. They're all pretty good. Aravos, okay, the aravos should be red, the stem should be red if you can, and you have to have all the leaves should be there. If you want to buy lulav that are mehudarim, they're very shvach. The tops are not tall and strong. The aravos that are the most mehudar are the aravos that on the very, very top are very, like, very small. They're very shvach. We think of aravos, very strong aravos. They go up, the leaves go all the way up, and the top branch, the top, the very tip is very hard. That's not necessarily ideal. The ideal, that has a shaila of niktap, that it's cut, without going into the picture, we need really pictures. The ideal aravos are the aravos that look like, you see this guy in shul, you couldn't get for yourself better aravos. You have such a nice esrog, such a nice lulav, such a nice hadasim, and the aravos look so shvach. The aravos, it look like they're like at the very, very top. It's like, they're barely there. The truth is, this guy knows what he's doing. Those are the best aravos. The best aravos, the most mehudar aravos, are the ones that are on the top, super duper soft. They're very fresh. They're very fresh. There's nothing hard. We buy the aravos. They're all from Muncie. They're all the top. They're very strong. They're very stark. They're kosher lechatchila. Don't get me wrong. But when you see the guy that has the aravos, like they're drooping almost. Yeah. They're very shvach. That's the best. That's what aravos are supposed to be. They're supposed to be the ones that are shvach on top. It's not niktam. There's no concern that the top, the leaf was cut. The whole industry and people who sell bedafka, these type of aravos, they give these aravos steroids. Mamish 3 days before Yom Tov. It's a science. You wouldn't believe what's going on out there. Okay, how they manipulate the dalet minim just so how to do it in order that it should be just perfect. You can maximize. They do give it steroids. They inject it. They do different things. Okay. Let me just conclude with a very short dvar agada. There's a minig by Klal Yisrael. Many people they mahader to bench lulav and esrog in the sukkah. They didn't do that.
Yes.
To bench lulav. Yeah, why? Yeah. Why do you bench lulav and esrog bedavka in the sukkah? So the partial answer is you want to be ma'ariv. You want to mingle the mitzvahs hayoyim together. We have two mitzvahs, sukkah. Dalet minim, bring them together. That's the pashup shot. But there's another pshat, a deeper pshat. And that is the dalet minim represent the peiros. It represents our productivity, our success in life. A lot of you notice the nusach of the tefillah Yom HaKippurim, especially in the avodas of Yom HaKippurim, we ask that it should be a year where the earth produces good fruit. It's symbolic. Fruit represents a person's accomplishments, a person's success, a person's fulfillment in this world. Children are called peiros, right? When you accomplish something in learning, it's your peiros. Whatever you accomplish in this world, we, in our language, our vernacular, we call it peiros. What are the dalet minim? The peiros. Usmachnu l'chem l'chel l'chem l'chem pre-eitz hodar. Fruit. These are fruits. Pre-eitz hodar. Kapois, tamarim, which produce dates. Anaf eats avos fragrance. Okay, then there's the anad, then there's the arinochel. We explained in the beginning, this is an indication that there's water. It's an indicator. And water is critical to produce fruit. Usimachtem. Where bedavko do we take these objects which produce fruit? Do we rejoice? We go into the sukkah. What's the message? Don't think that just because, let's do the klal and the prat. Don't think that klal Yisrael, in this where we are today, in golus. We're in golus! No, so in golus we have no obligation to serve Hashem to the fullest degree possible. We have no obligation. Golus, if Hashem wants us to, we should serve Him, He'll let Him take us to Eretz Yisrael, and in Eretz Yisrael, well, based on English, we'll serve Hashem. Golus! Golus, you know, what do you want from us? Pumfakert. You take the Dalet meaning into the sukkah. The sukkah is golos. You left your diras akeva and you go into the diras arai. That diras arai is golos. We say mamash the musach of the machzor and the hirotzim is golos. In golos, don't forget, produce peros. Just because klal Yisrael are living in golos, produce, be successful in Torah. Avoida in raising children, be matzliach in galus. Bedafka, it's more important to take the dalad minim into the sukkah in chutz liaretz than it is in Eretz Yisrael. Because in Eretz Yisrael, if you take the dalad minim, nu, I'm in Eretz Yisrael, you're in the Holy Land. In chutz liaretz, you can make a mistake, nu, what's the big deal? Adarabah. In galus, you have to usimachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem. And the same way, this is true for klal Yisrael. On a big level, it's true for each yochid on a personal level. People think that when they're depressed and when they're low, when things are not going their way, they have a bad day and things are just not the way it's supposed to be. No, I throw in the towel, let me sit back today and just write off the day and do whatever I want, period. Pumfakert. The time when it's the most difficult, when you're at your lowest moment, this is your personal golus. This is where you don't want to be, where you're not supposed to be. Oh, it's here where you should achieve success. It's in this nisoyon, take the peros, produce peros bedavka in this low point, in this difficult matzav. Usimachtem lefnei Hashem elokeichem. Taking the dal and meeting in the sukkah is touches upon dvarim ha'oimdim berumoy shaloylam. The will, the desire to succeed, to make the most out of the most difficult situation. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you tomorrow. We'll continue.